All right, good morning. My name is Brad, one of the leaders here, along with three other guys. Appreciate you being here this morning. We are in the book of Exodus. So what we normally do is go through books of the Bible. We've done Genesis, did Matthew, now we're in Exodus. And just give you context of where we're at. The story is this. We're in chapter 4. In chapter 1, chapter 2, and chapter 3, basically, you have God's chosen people, the Israelites, living in a foreign land, which is Egypt. Okay? So they're there. And now, the new king, or the new Pharaoh of Egypt, is frightened by the Israelites. So he's trying to completely reduce them, to diminish their power. Remember, we're talking about 2 million Israelites living in Egypt at this time. All right? And as Pharaoh is trying to get rid of the Israelites, he's putting them into slavery, and he's making their life miserable. So that's where we're at. The person who we're talking about is Moses. Moses, as we're going to see, is chosen by God to eventually lead the Israelites out of Egypt. And what we're talking about last week was this idea that we have to put ourselves in the position of the Israelites and recognize that they're in slavery, it's life stinks, it's hard, and for many of us, we should be able to relate to that. Because in a real sense, we're in slavery too. We're in slavery to this idea of sin. We're born sinners, and we have to deal with sin our whole lives. And it manifests itself in different ways we talked about last week. Many of us are dealing with addiction. Many of us are dealing with abuse that has occurred to us. But we have just dealt with a bunch of stuff that's not enjoyable, just like the Israelites are going through. And we're going to see that as we watch God work through the Israelites, he's doing the same thing with us today. And we should be able to put that all together. So anyway, the story that we're picking up with is that Moses go ahead and put the first slide up to put it in context. We talked about the first 40 years of Moses' life, he got a great education, the best education you could get at that time. So he was top dog as far as education, what he knew, and all the culture and everything. And we saw that with all that education, the way he handled the slave master was by killing him. And God's like, you're not ready to be used yet. You're still trying to do it your way. So then we see the second 40 years is what we're picking up right now. Moses spent 40 years learning to be nothing. He's walking around a desert with sheep for 40 years. Mostly because he's scared to death to go back to Egypt because the Egyptians found out that he killed the slave masters and he was afraid he was going to get killed. And now we're going to see the last 40 years where we're picking up right now, experiencing God being able to do something with nothing. Okay? And again, I really want to emphasize, as we just go through Exodus 4, you're going to see that God is able to use all of us to do his will. And he's going to use us all uniquely, differently. Okay? But we're going to constantly put up rejection to being used by God. I'll explain what I mean in a minute. Okay, so Moses is in the middle of this desert, and this bush is on fire, but it's not burning up. And by the way, did anyone see this? The History Channel, I don't know how accurate it's going to be or anything, but they're putting out, a four-part series on the highlights of the Bible. It's like real action-packed and pretty amazing. Anybody see that? No. Okay. Well, it's going to come out in March. I think March 4th or something like that. You're going to see. It's called like the story of the Bible or something like that. And I was watching the clip, the preview, and they had a really interesting clip of Moses standing in front of this burning bush. So, I mean, Hollywood, it's great what they can do. So it was like, you know, this big flame and Moses standing there. So anyway, I know what it looks like now because the History Channel did it for me. So, all right, here we go. Chapter 4. As I go through chapter 4, I've shown you this before, but I want you to keep this in mind. This is from Henry Blackaby. in a workbook called Experiencing God, and I think it's very interesting. Let me explain this picture to you if you haven't seen it before. We see God, and we see it says God's working, and then the ultimate goal to the far right is obeying and experiencing God. Okay, so how does that happen? Because we're going to see that in Moses. Moses, we see God's at work, and then we see Moses at the end of this is going to experience God. And many of us are sitting here going, I've never really experienced God, and I don't know, it's just kind of empty and all that. Okay, well, let me explain why maybe that is the case. First of all, let's go through this. Point number two, it says relationship. God is desiring a relationship with all of us. We're going to see that with Moses. He's more interested in relationship than anything else. The second thing is God invites. That's where we left off in chapter 3. God was inviting Moses to redeem or free the people from Egypt. Okay? There's an invitation. The fourth thing is that God speaks. Okay, we don't have a burning bush. What do we have? Well, again, I get frustrated when people are like, well, I would have listened to God if there was a burning bush in my life. Well, that's just one little event. We have thousands of events of seeing God at work and speaking. We don't have to wait on one, like a car on fire, but it doesn't really catch on fire. It's just burning. And then God speaks out of that. We don't have to wait on that. We have hundreds and thousands of God speaking to us. Okay? I know I made that like a noun. All right. So we see God speaking. Now, when God does speak to you, reading his word, praying in communication or in fellowship with other people, God speaks to you, what happens? Five is a crisis of belief. And this is what's interesting. Think of your own life. You know God has told you to do something. God has spoken to you, and you're like, you know what? I need to go apologize to that person because what I did was wrong, and I just need to go speak to that person. And then you have this crisis of belief. Well, what if they call me a jerk, and they say, yeah, you're right, you're a jerk. I can't believe it. And you're like, I don't want to do it. And you push back, okay? So normally when we push back to God leading, we never do anything then. I'm going to jump right there and say, if you stop at five, you never get to seven, which is experiencing God. Remember I just said at the beginning, many of us say, well, I don't experience God. How does that work? Well, what happens is you hear God speaking to you, or you read God speaking to you, and you get a crisis of belief and you say, I ain't doing it. And you stop. Well, then God never gets to expose himself to you, working in your life. Point six is, when there's a crisis of belief, you have to adjust to that. Something has to happen differently. In the case of Moses, it means he's got to go speak to the Pharaoh. And then seven is experiencing God. Keep that in mind as we go through chapter 4. All right? So God just invited him to be part of it. What's Moses' response? Verse 1. But Moses protested again. What if they won't believe me or listen to me? What if they say the Lord never appeared to you? Okay, go ahead, Tristan. What was Moses' response to God's commission? Doubt. Crisis of belief. I just said that that's, and I'm telling you, what is beautiful about God using ordinary people is we don't sit there and go, man, Moses is just amazing. Instead, we look at Moses and go, yeah, he's a lot like me. I'd be like, well, God, give me one more piece of evidence. Give me one more reason why I should. Okay, we should be able to look at this and relate. There's nothing special about Moses. Okay, this is all about God, not Moses. So you don't have to be anything special either. It's God who's special. It's God who can use you. Remember, if it's you being special, then we'd all gather around and go, oh, look how special he is. And we would clap for you and worship you and say, he's a special person. Okay, and I know I'm getting grief for coaching because I don't sit around and tell everybody how special they are. Sorry, I'm angry. But you'll see it's right because God was angry. And I'm going to touch on that. And I love that verse. God was angry. Yes. Anyway, I'm angry, okay? Because you're not special. All right? God's special. I'm so sick of hearing about how we're supposed to tell everybody how special they are. Sorry. I can't believe I'm venting right now. You are special in a different way. Just anyway, let's go on. Verse 2. 2 through 9. Let me read this. So what's going on here is God's going to give Moses 3 miracles to convince him, ultimately to convince the Israelites that God did appear to him. Now, some people go in and break down each one of these miracles like, well, the rod and the snake has some correlation to Satan and all. I'm going to just skip that. If you're interested in what the possibility or speculation of all these miracles, you can research that. I'm just going to tell you they're miracles. Then the Lord asked him, "What is in your hand?" "A shepherd's staff," Moses replied. Remember, he's standing in front of a burning bush while this is going on. Okay, he's barefoot in front of a bush in the desert, and God's speaking to him. He has his staff. "Throw it down on the ground," the Lord told him. So Moses threw down the staff, and it turned into a snake or a serpent. Moses jumped back. Then the Lord told him, "Reach out and grab its tail." So Moses reached out and grabbed it. And it turned back to a shepherd, or into a shepherd's staff in his hand. "Perform this sign," the Lord told them. "Then they will believe that the Lord God of their ancestors, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, really has appeared to you." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Now put your hand inside your cloak." So Moses put his hand inside his cloak. Then he took it out again, and his hand was white as snow with a severe skin disease. Okay, the speculation is some sort of leprosy. "Now, put your hand back into your cloak." The Lord said. So Moses put his hand back in, and then he took it out again, and it was healthy as the rest of his body. The Lord said to Moses, "If they do not believe you and are not convinced by the first miraculous sign, and they're not convinced by the second sign, and if they don't believe you or listen to you, or even after these 2 signs, then take some water from the Nile River." The Nile River was one of their gods. Okay? This isn't just like, you know, just grab some water out of the bathtub. This is taking water from one of their gods, the Nile River. Okay, take it out, pour it on the ground, on the dry ground. When you do, the water from the Nile will turn to blood on the ground. Okay, so the simple point is God is going to prove to the Israelites that he spoke to Moses and that they need to listen to him. Okay, that's the point of that. All right, next. Let me read Acts 7:20 to you once, because this is good to put this in context. Okay, 7:20 through 22 says this. This is Stephen speaking about Moses. It says, At the time Moses was born, a beautiful child in God's eyes, his parents cared for him at home for 3 months. When they had abandoned him, Pharaoh's daughter adopted him and raised him as his own son. Moses was taught all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and he was powerful in both speech and action. Okay, you got that? Moses was a good speaker. He's powerful. Now, God just gave him 3 amazing signs to say, go show the Israelites, they're going to believe you. Okay, so now we're in verse 10. But Moses pleaded with the Lord, "Oh Lord, I'm not very good with words. I never have been, and I'm not now, even though you've spoken to me. I get tongue-tied, and my words are tangled." First of all, that's a pretty impressive sentence that he just said there. All right? The point is, we are all gifted at different things. And even if you're gifted at it, and God's saying, "I want you to go and do it, but you have to trust me," we're going to bail. That's our first instinct, is to say, "Nope, not me, can't do it." I mean, Moses just keeps stepping it up with this crisis of belief. Again, think about your own life. Right now, God is inviting you to do something that involves him. You know what it is. Again, that person to talk to, your kids to read to at night and build into them more. Whatever it is, pray with your family. Whatever the thing is, what are you doing? You're like, I can't do it. I can't pray out loud. I'll say something dumb. But okay, you have that same crisis of belief. You're pushing back. And I'm telling you, you'll never experience God if you don't push through that crisis of belief. Okay, next. Well, let me read one more thing. More doubt, more crisis of belief. And this is interesting. Think about all the experiences with God that Moses was willing to pass up. You think about all the people who have experienced God to the highest level. Moses has to be one of the top people. He didn't see the end of the story. He didn't know what he was going to experience. But he was this close to giving it all up. And again, how close are we to giving it all up? Next, 11 through 13. Then the Lord asked Moses, who makes a person's mouth? Who decides whether a person can speak or not, hear or not, see or not? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go, I will be with you as you speak, and I will instruct you what to say. So, with no more excuses, we're going to see what Moses' response is. 13, it says, but Moses again pleaded, Lord, please send someone else. So he has no more excuses, and finally he's just like, okay, God, I'm chicken. I'm not doing it. He tried to use all of his excuses. Okay? And this, again, is my favorite verse. Then the Lord became angry with Moses. Okay? Again, what I was challenged with, this is a little counseling session for me, so just glad you guys could be part of it, was that I don't love because I get angry. It was, I coach, excuse me, at a public school, and this woman is a Christian, and she comes up and she's like, you know, I just, basically saying like, I don't get the sense that you're loving like a Christian would love because you get mad at the kids. And in a lot of ways, there's things I need to improve. A lot of things I need to improve. But what I came back with was, are you saying that to be loving, you always have to be like chipper and you always have to just be encouraging? And she's like, oh yeah, definitely. I was like, well, I would argue against that. Because what love is giving the words that the person needs at that time. And sometimes they're hard words. Okay? When my son argues a call with a referee, I have hard words for him because I love him and he needs hard words. Okay? I would argue that's because I love him, not because I'm a meanie pants. Okay? So, what God is doing is listening to Moses argue, and God's finally like, I've had it, Moses. Listen to me. I'm getting upset. Okay? So, again, I get frustrated with, because by nature, I'm just not like this happy-go-lucky person, so I'm trying to always find defenses for my miserable state, and I love when I can see it. Okay, moving on. So, became angry with Moses. All right, he said, what about your brother, Aaron, the Levite? I know he speaks well, and look, he's on his way to come meet with you now. He will be delighted to see you. Talk with him. Put words in his mouth. I will be with both of you as you speak, and I will instruct you both what to do. Aaron will be your spokesman for the people. He will be your mouthpiece. He will stand in a place of God for him, telling him what to say. And take your shepherd's staff with you and use it to perform the miraculous signs I have shown you. Okay, so go ahead, Tristan. Move on. This idea of sometimes it's good to have a partner, it actually comes back to bite Moses a little bit in chapter 32. But still, I see the value that, you know, going out together, kind of encouraging each other, there's definitely value in that. Okay, next, 18 through 20. So Moses went back to home to Jethro, his father-in-law. Please let me return to my relatives in Egypt, Moses said. I don't even know if they're still alive. Go in peace, Jethro replied. Before Moses left Midian, the Lord said to him, "Return to Egypt, for all those who wanted to kill you have died." So Moses took his wife, his sons, put them on a donkey, and headed back to the land of Egypt. In his hand, he carried the staff of God. Okay, Moses has two babies at this time. He has a wife, and they're all packed on a donkey. Okay? I don't know how that works. I don't know how four people get on one donkey with all their stuff. It's either a big donkey or they're little people. Anyway, they're on a donkey. It's probably Moses walking along with them. All right? And maybe the wife carrying the kids, something like that. But the interesting point is we see the most important person right now being used by God in all that's happening is on a donkey in the middle of the desert. Okay, he's not in this big caravan, not with lots of camels. That would be the high-end transportation at that point. Okay, he's on the low end. It'd be like, I'm trying to think, I don't know why, Horizon. Was that a little car? Was it called a Horizon? I'm back in the 80s thinking of the little car that, you know, you had the Horizon in a little car today. All right, that's what the most important person is in. Go ahead, Tristan. All right, go ahead. So 21 through 23. "And the Lord told Moses, 'When you arrive back in Egypt, go to Pharaoh and perform all the miracles I have empowered you to do. But I will harden his heart so he will refuse to let the people go. Then you will tell him, this is what the Lord says, Israel is my firstborn son. I command you, let my son go so he can worship me. But since you have refused, I will now kill your firstborn son.'" All right, and we'll look at that has more meaning as we get into later in Exodus. All right, this hardening of the heart, some people have a hard time with that. They're like, wait a minute, God is making someone evil? Is that what's happening? Okay. I like this description out of Sonic Light. It says this: when God said he would harden Pharaoh's heart, he's not saying that Pharaoh would be unable to choose whether he would release the Israelites or not. God made Pharaoh's heart progressively harder as the king chose to disobey God's will. If you look, the first five plagues that are going to occur, there's going to be 10. The first five are read, Pharaoh's hardened his heart. So we see Pharaoh continues to push back against God. And then after that, the last five, you see then God says he hardened his heart. So you get this picture that Pharaoh had the option to turn to God or not, didn't, and then God just sealed the deal on that to make himself revealed even more. Okay? All right, 24 through 26, one of the most bizarre sections. I'm going to read through it kind of quickly, and you'll see why. "On the way to Egypt, at a place where Moses and his family had stopped for the night, the Lord confronted him and was about to kill him. But Moses' wife, Zipporah, took a flint knife and circumcised her son. She touched his feet," or if you read, there's a commentary, she possibly touched something else, "with the foreskin and said, 'Now you are the bridegroom of blood to me.' When she said bridegroom of blood, she was referring to the circumcision. After that, the Lord left them alone," or left him alone, I should say. All right, there is a ton written on this because there's a lot of speculation on what it means. I'm going to skip all the speculation. I'm going to go to the main point of what I believe this is saying, and then I'll add some more to it. Says this: normally, before God will use a person publicly, he or she must first be obedient to God at home. Okay, what this is referring to is circumcision in Genesis chapter 17 was part of the way God set his people aside. They were circumcised. Okay, and you're going to see it has a lot of picturing of New Testament as well as Jesus. This story shows that God would rather have us die than to take up his work with unconsecrated hearts and unsurrendered wills. The point is this: Moses wasn't doing what he was supposed to be doing with his family, and now he was going to be used for something bigger, and God stopped the whole thing. and said, no, you have to have it, the basic things down before you can do the bigger things. You have to have things right at home before you can go do them publicly. 2 points I want to make. One, it was a great night last night. My wife said, you know what, we're going to watch a movie you like. And we watched Act of Valor. Oh, anybody see that movie? Yeah, good stuff. But anyway, the one part was amazing to me. There are these green berets, I guess is what they are, Navy SEALs. I guess Navy SEALs. And they just do these amazing missions. It's awesome. And before they're leaving for their mission, they're kind of all gathered around. They're like at the beach, kind of hanging out with their families and stuff. And the guy says, he goes, listen. He goes, you have to have everything right at home. He's like, we can't go do what we need to do if you don't have everything right at home. He was talking about, you know, do you have your finances right? Is your relationship right with your wife? He's like, you got to have everything right. Because the things we're going to do, all of us have to be on our A game. We can't be out there putting us all at risk if your mind is like, man, I messed up. I bought more stuff than I should have, and now I'm in debt. He's like, you can't do that. I was like, man, that is a perfect picture of how we're supposed to live as believers. Get it right at home so you can then go be effective for God out in the public. So many of us have our lives completely messed up, and we're wondering why we can't minister or serve other people. Constantly we say here, it goes like this, God, spouse, kids, then work and all the other things. Get your relationship right with God. Get your relationship right with your wife. Get things right with your kids. Then worry about the other stuff. It also made me think of this. This was sitting on our kitchen table one time, and I grabbed it and put it in my file. It's relating to this idea of having things right at home. It says, what does it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Likewise, what does it profit a father if he gains the whole world and loses the souls of his children? What can be called success if your children turn out to be part of the world's problem rather than its cure? What satisfaction can there be in the comforts of material success if your children grow up needing counseling rather than being sought after to give counsel? If your children lie awake at night suffering from guilt and anxiety being gnawed upon them by the demons of self-indulgence, how can you enjoy your food or your pillow? The success of a tree and a man is measured by the fruit that is born. The fruit of a man or woman is their children. Everything else is falling leaves. It says, let me die poor. Let me die early. Let me be ravaged by disease. Just let my children rise up and call me blessed. Let me not measure my giving by the dollars I spend on them or the educational opportunities that my station of life affords them, but rather by the hours I spend with them in fellowship. It goes on, but I just think it's interesting. What is it that we need to get right? Okay? I know some of you are sitting here without kids, but just keep that in mind if someday you have kids. What good is it if your kids are just a complete mess? Okay? So I think that's what that section was referring to. All right, finishing up. 27 through 31. Now the Lord said to Aaron, go out into the wilderness and meet Moses. So Aaron went and met Moses at the mountain of God. He embraced him. Moses then told Aaron everything that the Lord had commanded him to say. And he told him about the miraculous signs the Lord had commanded him to perform. Then Moses and Aaron returned to Egypt and called the elders of Israel together. Aaron told them everything the Lord had told Moses. And Moses performed the miraculous signs as he watched. I'm sorry, as they watched. I'm just going to stop there for 1 second. You're going to see, here's Aaron speaking, But as Moses' confidence grows, you see Moses is speaking. You don't see Aaron speaking for him anymore. And I think that's a really interesting picture. Okay. Last verse is this. Then the people of Israel were convinced that the Lord had sent Moses and Aaron. When they heard that the Lord was concerned about them, and that's where I hesitate to say you're not special. I hope you know what I meant in the context. Okay? You're special in that God created you. I'm being convicted now because I'll share this in a nice way. Sometimes my wife explains to me how I say things inappropriately in a nice, loving way. And I just heard her voice saying, I can't believe you just told everybody they're jerks and not special. What I meant was, I think sometimes we overinflate how special we are. Okay, but God does think you are special. Okay, am I being a wimp right now? Mark is like, I can't believe he's trying to backtrack. Oh boy, forget it. All right, so, but he does say this, you know, that he was concerned about them and had seen their misery. And their response was, they bowed down and worshiped. Okay, there you see this last note. Worship is an expression of their faith. They had faith that God was hearing them, was going to rescue them, and they worshiped. Okay? Think about that as we go through all these hard things in our lives, as we understand God is pursuing us, it does lead us to worship him. Okay, I'll pray and then I'll take any questions. God, thank you for loving us. Thank you for caring for us. Thank you for providing for us. Thank you for pursuing us. And thank you that we have your word. Pray that we do those basic things and just focus on the fact that you have revealed yourself to us. And then I also pray that as you're speaking to us, I pray that we do have enough faith to step out and get through that crisis of belief so we can experience you and know you better. Amen. All right, questions, comments? About the partner part? Yeah, because, well, the reason I hesitated on that because, I'm sorry, did you say why it was bad in the end?
Yeah.
Okay. In Exodus 32, we see when Moses went up to speak to God, Aaron, who was with him, who didn't have to be with him if he wouldn't have been chicken in a sense. We see that's the whole golden calf thing where Moses is up on the mountain and down below all the people are like, what's going on? You know, I can't believe we're being led out here. And it says there, so Aaron said, take the gold rings from your ears, from your wives and your sons. And they ended up making that false god out of all their jewelry. So that's one way in which that may not have happened if he wouldn't have taken Aaron with him. So that's why that part, that comment was referring to. And if that didn't make a lot of sense to you, you can read Exodus 32. It's a pretty clear story that explains what happens there. Good question. Anything else? Yeah.
Did the Israelites not believe in God at all at this point?
Well, no. They did believe in God, but you have to remember, there was about a 400-year period where God hadn't spoken or revealed himself at all through a prophet or anything. And their life was getting more and more difficult, so they were becoming very discouraged. But you'll see, as we go through this, they do definitely believe in God. But you also see they're a lot like us, where they constantly doubt. They constantly lose their faith. They constantly turn toward other idols, just like the story in chapter 32 I was just referring to. So you see they just have, like us, a long way to go in their relationship with God.
So was God angry at them because they thought the Nile River was God?
No. Okay, when I said they thought the Nile River was God, I'm glad you said that. The Egyptians were the notorious at making gods out of everything. Think of the pyramids. Think of the pharaohs with all the, you know, the cobra. In fact, some people speculate that the snake was referring to the pharaohs would have cobras on their crown or something like that. Some people speculate that's what the importance of that was, to show that God had power over even what they thought was their God. So it was the Egyptians who made the Nile River their God. It wasn't the Israelites. But they will definitely mess up, though. You'll see. They spend a lot of time, just like we do. We are constantly producing idols in our life. We are worshipers by design, by God. And we constantly exchange worshiping God for worshiping something else. And I'm glad you got that. That's good. I don't know if you guys heard her. She said she likes that Moses didn't give up, or God didn't give up on Moses. And you do see God being patient, right? He's patient. I mean, that's where I need to grow so much. You know, I just jump to the angry part. I don't see how patient he was all the way through, where I am not patient, and I need to grow in that and to be more like God, which is what we're to do. So, that's great. Glad you saw that. Thanks for that comment. Anything else? Anyone has anything? Trace, did you have your hand up?
Yeah.
Oh. Right. Yeah, it's weird. Trace is saying how Moses giving excuses for being scared to go to Pharaoh when he's talking to God of the universe. You know, and just we lose the same focus, right? I mean, we get scared. So anyway, I'm just glad to see that Moses was very human. He wasn't like, "You're right, God, let's go get him." Because then I would feel like I'm a loser. So, good point. Thank you. I'm special. All right. Anyone else? Any comments? Good comments. Thanks, Trace. Anyone else? Okay. We'll go ahead and do offering.